Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Had a quick little transition from out in the lobby. We've got all these cameras and all this stuff. We're going to use Zoom today.
It's scary.
Every time we try to do this, it turns out great.
You always catch Aaron doing something weird on camera.
No, that's Bill. Bill's job.
No.
Bill's always doing something weird.
Not me.
Okay, so today, the live show is December 12th, 2021. In case we play this again in the future, you'll have some frame of reference. Our guest is Professor Albert Stuart Reese. I'm not going to go into that till Bill does the sponsor. But you don't want to go anywhere because today's show is going to be super interesting.
Yes.
Hit it,
yes.
Bill.
Yeah, my name's Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor, I didn't catch your name. What was your name?
I'm going to wait and see if it turns out good or not.
Oh, okay. Our sponsor today is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located up on Twin View Boulevard, 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they'll fix you up with pretty much anything John Deere, steel, Honda. They got it all up there. Go up and see them or give them a call at 226-9226. Or you can catch them on the web at PapeMachinery.com. And they just completed their acquisition of Valley Truck and Tractor down in the Sacramento Valley.
Ta-da!
Added 9 more stores to the team. We're really excited about that. Another 818 employees. So we'll have you covered no matter where you are. If you can hear my voice, we got you covered.
Nice family-owned business.
Yep.
Actually run by the family.
The family, and they're very nice folks, nice people to work for, and we look forward to bringing on the extra folks.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So, speeding forward into our topic, because we have a lot of ground to cover. So I'm going to tell you about Dr. Reese, and I have actually never spoken with him. Well, you'll find out why in a minute, because in addition to working with patients, Dr. Reese is also a professor of medicine at the University of Western Australia and the Edith Cowan University, which are both near Perth in Western Australia. It'll sound a lot more authentic when he says it, but, you know.
Yeah. gotta go
with my rotten American accent. For many years, Dr. Reese has published clinical and epidemiological research and reviews of basic science relevant to drug use and exploring the health implications of the known harms and risks of drug use and drug dependency. This body of work is ethically approved by various human research ethics research committees around the country. So he didn't just start doing this. He isn't shooting from the hip. He does this all the time, and he is the man on this topic. I've heard his name multiple times, so we're really excited to have him. His extensive research agenda continues to grow as new papers are being added to the list, and wait till you see the list. It's very long. I'm not going to read all that part, but I want you, because he's going to explain all this in non-science talk. We started reading this and it's like, oh boy, we're going to have to get the decoded version. But at present, he's using his advanced statistical techniques in R, whatever R is. I'm Orion, so maybe it's got something to do with my people.
I don't think to conduct
space-time analysis and look at the formal statistical pathways of causal interference, showing that relationships are not just associations, but actually causal in various large national USA data sets using advanced software. You will not be surprised that one of the topics is the risks associated with cannabis use, especially genotoxicity expressed clinically in birth defects and cancers, and neurotoxicity expressed clinically in autism and mental illness. So, you know, the drug that doesn't hurt anybody, that's all natural, blah, blah, blah. We do a lot to dispel that myth here. I think today is going to kind of, not to be too morbid, but put a nail in the coffin, if you don't mind my saying so. So, Dr. Reese, we won't interrupt you on any of the science unless we have no idea what you're talking about. So we've got about 10 minutes till our first break, so take it away.
Hi, Aaron. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Can you hear me loud and clear?
We can, actually. Dun, 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 dun.
That's great. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show. Look, there's really three main points I want to make about cannabis genotoxicity. The first is that it's not controversial. It's agreed, whilst cannabis obviously is controversial, cannabis genotoxicity is not controversial. It's agreed right across the board. It's registered in the FDA documents from the registered cannabinoids, and it's in the prescribing information for the
recording stopped
in America. So that's a very important point, that cannabis cannabinoid genotoxicity is agreed right across the board. The second big point is that it's an exponential effect. At the higher doses, at the micromolar doses in serum, you get an exponential dose response. Now, that's very important for nations or states moving into a legalization paradigm, because they're moving up into the higher zone, which is highly genotoxic. And the third big point is that this cannabinoid genotoxicity essentially relates to all cannabinoids. It's not just about delta-9 THC. It includes virtually all the cannabinoids we've studied. So that includes delta-8 THC, cannabidiol, cannabichromane, cannabinol, and cannabigerol.
So for those of us who Dr. Reese, for those of us who don't actually speak cannabis, what exactly, where would the regular person see those things? What are those things in real life?
That's a great question.
It's kind of a dumb question, but I mean, I don't know the difference between any of them.
Well, we all know what the cannabis plant is, cannabis sativa, and the cannabinoids are the unique cannabinoids, that chemicals that come out of the plant that have a particular structure, which is it's got four carbon rings connected together, which is based on a cannabinoid nucleus, which is called the olivetol nucleus. So they're all closely related. They're all structurally similar. They have different hydroxyl groups in different places, which is an OH group, different acid groups. But they're all unique cannabinoids, unique to the cannabis sativa plant, that are present in marijuana.
Okay.
All right.
So people might contact all of those things.
Oh yeah. That stuff's in cannabis that you get from the store or that you grow. The different cannabinoids. But the point is, because these days there's a lot of airplay given to cannabidiol, to delta-8 THC, but the one of the take-homes from this is that we're talking about all the cannabinoids, the genotoxicity seems to come from the cannabinoid nucleus, which is called a levitol. It's not related to the side chains or where the different double bonds are, which is the difference between delta-8 THC and delta-9 THC. In delta-8 and delta-9, the double bond on the C-ring is shifted just across one carbon, but it doesn't make much difference to the genotoxicity. That seems to be a class effect across all the cannabinoids. So I thought I thought before we talk about much more, it would be good to say what cannabinoid toxicity looks like clinically, how that's expressed. The genotoxicity, the key is to understand this is a toxic effect on the DNA, on the genes, which in a sense is the biological crown jewels. That's the information hub of all of our cells. And as you said in your introduction, the genetic toxicity clinically is expressed in three main features, which is cancer, birth defects, and aging.
Okay.
Now, we published just a few months ago in Scientific Reports, and we looked at five chromosomal defects, which are tracked over time. This is birth defects in the US. And we showed that all five of them were strongly linked with rising cannabis use across the US, and that effect persisted after multivariate control for ethnic and economic variables. And it actually fulfilled the criteria of causal inference. That is, it wasn't just an association, but there are statistical ways you can process this data which shows that was causally involved. In that same paper, we also looked at five cancers: thyroid cancer, liver cancer, breast cancer, acute myeloid leukemia, and pancreatic cancer. The big news about that: breast cancer is the commonest cancer of all human cancers in the US in recent years. And liver cancer is growing faster than one of the fastest growing cancers. And pancreatic cancer is the cancer with one of the fastest growing death rates. So we looked at those five cancers, and we found the same thing, that they all correlated closely with rising cannabis use, and the association was robust to multivariable adjustment. And in a causal inferential framework, the association appeared epidemiologically to be causal rather than just a mere association.
Hmm. Okay. Now, is this are these chemicals also found in CBD? That's a big thing we hear here in the States. It's sold pretty much in every drugstore now, and people are touting its effects. Is it also contained in the CBD oil?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
CBD is also genotoxic. CBD epidemiologically, CBD. Is associated with a bunch of about 12 cancers, but it's a different set of cancers to the other cannabinoids, but it's still tightly related to some cancers, including prostate cancer, which is the commonest cancer in males.
Interesting.
Wow, so much for that being a lot safer.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the cancer which is most strongly associated with cannabis use in the scientific literature is actually testicular cancer. Which is also the cancer that's associated with most years of life lost of any adult cancer. And whilst we're talking about testicular cancer, strangely, it's also relevant to females. Our recent analyses of the European data, the analogous tumor in females is called dysgerminoma of the ovary. And that tumor in females is also associated with cannabis use. That hasn't been shown before. But when I'm talking about testicular cancer, it probably has relationships to that germ cell tumor in the female. Now, testicular cancer has been found in four longitudinal studies to be linked with cannabis use, and the link was quoted by the director of the National Institutes of Drug Abuse in her recent paper looking at cannabis. And it's very interesting to think, because scientists have figured out how you make a testicular cancer, there's a number of steps involved, genotoxic steps, to give rise to the tumor. The first thing to know about testicular cancer and cannabis is the literature, the meta-analysis, says that the rate of testicular cancer is increased 2.6-fold after cannabis exposure. So there's a 2.6 jump from cannabis exposure. The other thing is that it cannabis reduces the incubation period of testicular cancer. The median age of testicular cancer in males in the US is about 33 years, and that means the biogenesis, it takes 33 years on average to produce the cancer. But after cannabis exposure, which probably happens at a median of 20 years of age, they get the tumor at 33, so that reduces the incubation period from 33 years to 13 years, which is a 2.5-fold acceleration. So if you multiply the 2.6-fold increase incidence by the 2.5-fold acceleration, you get a 6.5 increase in the rate incubation period index. The 6.5, that's massive. Now, To the biogenic steps to make a testis tumor, you have one or two doubling events of the genome. So the genome has to replicate an extra one or two times. Then you lose 50 to 70 chromosomal arms. The chromosomal arms are amputated. Up to 70 arms are lost after the genome has been doubled. You have to demethylate the DNA. Now, everyone knows what the DNA looks like. It's a spiral helix. We've all seen that. But it actually carries traffic lights on it, which turn the genes on and off, which in general terms is called the epigenetic code. And cannabis messes with the epigenetic code at many levels. So you have genome-wide demethylation, which cannabis perturbs. Chromosome number 12 is chopped in half and doubled. And you get an isochromosome 12, the short ends of the chromosome are doubled. And then you lose five chromosomes, chromosome 1, 11, 13, 18, and Y, and you gain five chromosomes, 7, 8, 12, 21, and X, right? So there's a massive genetic rearrangement, but the thing that blows me away is you double the whole genome, then you have to amputate up to 70 chromosomal arms to make a testis tumor, and cannabis is obviously doing that in testicular cancer 6.5 times faster than control.
And you're talking, I'm sure, we've got to take a quick break here, but when we come back, I really want to know what you think about this, because my guess is in the lab, you're talking about cannabis that's been grown without carbofuran and spray adhesive and all these other things that we're seeing in these these illegal grows. I mean, you add all those chemicals. I always figured that's what would give people cancer, but it sounds like they don't even need that to ramp it up. We're going to be right back. Our guest is Dr. Stuart Reese. He's coming to us from Australia via Zoom. The only reason I'm announcing that is because, you know, for the first time in the 11-year history of this show, this is all going just according to Hoyle, so I just want to keep that going.
Yeah, don't jinx it.
Now I'm trying the experimental music where I run it from here. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. And the music is playing on my computer, but there we go.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes, tell me what is wrong. Was I unwise to leave them open for so long? Call me strong, you call me weak, but still your secrets I will keep. Took for granted all the times I never let you down. You stumbled in and bumped your head. If not for me, then you'd be dead. I picked you up, put you back on solid ground. If I go crazy, then will you still call me Superman? If I'm alive and well, will you be there holding my hand?
That's what they're going to need is kryptonite, because they're all going to be glowing in the dark. So Dr. Reese, on this, I mean, when you add all, am I right? Your tests are all done on cannabis that's probably grown in a lab somewhere with no chemicals on it, right?
Yeah, dead right. You're on the money, Aaron.
So all this stuff that's being grown up, say, by us, and anybody who doubts that, actually, I'll put a link on today's page. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. And if you go there, there'll be a link. Actually, if you click on the pot page, you can see all the pictures of what goes on. But I'll put a link on there for a short documentary, 36 minutes, called Cartelville. And that was shot in Southern California about the illegal marijuana industry. And just in case anybody's curious, the reason we have so much of it in California is because we decriminalized the felony of illegal cartel grows. The illegal cannabis growing is not a felony. It's a misdemeanor. But the states around us are still felonies. So needless to say, we are the hot target audience. The second part of Cartelville will be about Northern California. So it'll be Shasta and Siskiyou counties. So you'll get to see that firsthand. And if you think the other one kind of blows your socks off, wait till you see the volume that's up here. But that includes a whole lot of chemicals that I've seen firsthand. And I can't imagine smoking or eating carbofuran, spray adhesive, and all the other stuff in between. What do you, I mean,
they don't put,
that ought to speed the cancer process up a lot.
They don't put spray adhesive on broccoli?
No, pretty much other crops don't have spray adhesive.
They don't have that.
No, they put it on the buds to attract pollen, believe it or not.
Wow.
What could go wrong? So Dr. Reese, when you add in all the chemical exposure, I know you can't actually quantify that just with me telling you over the, you know, little Zoom thing here, but what do you think? I mean, the cancer shows up much sooner.
Yes, ma'am, I agree. I haven't studied carbofuran, so I don't know about its carcinogenic potential, but it's obviously a highly toxic drug, and it kills a normal human. Just tiny doses can kill a normal human in seconds. So I don't know that actually people get to live very long after carbapenem exposure, so they may not live long enough. But look, if I could just add one comment that we didn't just get to make before. We talked about testicular cancer, and I read off a list of chromosomes that are involved. Now, I want you to remember this little fact. The human genome is 3,000 megabases long, right? So the total human genome is 3,000 megabases long. If you add up the list, the length of the chromosomes I mentioned a moment ago, you come to 1,254 megabases, which is 42% of the human genome is directly involved in known cannabis genotoxicity. I might say that again. 42% of the human genome is directly known to be involved in cannabis-induced genotoxicity. That is a massive result, which is not widely known. And that's without carbapenem.
So you add chemicals to that, and...
And you're off the Richter scale.
Wow.
If you live that long, which with carbapenem, you might not.
Right, right. So I think I know the answer, but I don't want to cheat. Why is this not being widely publicized? Because I'm assuming you didn't just figure this out yesterday.
Well, it has been, man. We published about it earlier in the year. You can read our paper. We have another paper coming out on the same thing. But listen, if I could just tell you something fascinating, which I did figure out just last week. I'm blown away that cannabis takes off 70 chromosomal arms 6 times faster than controls. And the question is how does it actually do that? And I was looking, working on slides. I have to give a talk for the International Association of the Science and Impact of Cannabis in 2 days' time. So those slides will be available. If you want to go over to the ISAC website, you can see the slides. There's 500-odd slides there. I'm going to skip through it in an hour. But I was preparing the slides for that talk, and I realized that in the published literature since 1969, there are photomicrographs of breaks on the end of chromosomes, fusions of the ends of chromosomes, and the formation of chromosomal bridges. And that's all in the published literature going back 50 years. Breaks, fusions, and bridges. What has never been described in cannabis before, in the lab, studied in cells that are actually growing and dividing, is there's a thing called a breakage, fusion, bridge cycle. So the chromosomes break at the ends. They fuse to other broken chromosomes. They form a bridge. And when the chromosomes separate during cell division in anaphase, the bridge is maintained. The bridge is broken by the forces of the mitotic spindle in anaphase. And the cycle goes around and around. This is called the breakage fusion bridge cycle, which was described in 1930. It's well known in cytogenetics. In other words, you set up a positive feedback cycle. One broken chromosome leads to another. What you have is effectively a lawnmower for chromosomes. And if cannabis causes that, which is well-documented literature, so that's how the cannabis cuts the 70 chromosome arms off 6.5 times quicker than the drop. It's absolutely amazing. It sets up a positive feed-forward cycle, and that's all the elements of that are published in the literature. I don't think the dots have been connected quite that way before, but that's how it does this amazing job at amputating all these chromosomal arms so quick.
I think the lawnmower for chromosomes, I don't think we can overstate that. That's something that should be made very public. Turn off your sound. I just can't even imagine what this is going to do in the future to our youth. Have you guys looked at this on animals? I'm assuming if this happens on people chromosomes, it completely happens on animals.
Yes, ma'am. That's correct. In animals, you've been a copy of the whole thing. All this birth defect stuff that we might get to talk about in due time is all seen in rabbits and rats and mice and guinea pigs, which guinea pigs and white rabbits are the best models for the human thing, and it's all seen and well-documented there.
Well, because people are using CBD on their dogs. I mean, not my idea. And so how's that going to turn out, you know, on people's dogs?
That's not going to be a pretty thing. Listen, can I just tell you something else of interest? There's another, the commonest childhood leukemia. I said breast cancer is the commonest adult cancer. The commonest childhood cancer is acute lymphoid leukemia. And that involves translocations commonly of chromosomes 4, 9, 10, 11, and 22. And if you add those five chromosomes together, you get 645 megabases, which is 20% of the human genome. The 20% of the human genome is clinically directly involved in ALL genesis, biogenesis, and we published about that in earlier in the year again. If you add the trisomies I've talked about, trisomy 13, 18, 21, Downs, Klinefelters together, with the two tumors that I've mentioned, you actually come up with 1,765 megabases of the 3,000 megabases of the human genome, which is 59% of the human genome is directly involved in cannabinoid genotoxicity. I'll say it again, 59% of the human genome is directly involved in cannabinoid genotoxicity.
Wow, that's overwhelming.
I mean, the fact that we can legalize, that we can legalize it with a profile like that, that almost seems impossible.
Well, it's off the Richter scale. I mean, you guys are in the US. In Australia, this stuff's catching on as well. There's a group here called Little Green Pharma, which is our leading medical marijuana company. And, you know, I jumped on their homepage, their landing page recently. There was nothing about cannabis. It was all about cash.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
And that is what it's about.
In other words, these guys are just unashamed drug dealers. I mean, drug runners. I mean, this is not since 1957 has a known genotoxin been deliberately marketed for profit. This is what distillers was about. The thalidomide mess in 1957 didn't come to the US. You had a heroic doctor in the US worked for FDA, and the genotoxin segment of the thalidomide file was vacant, so she failed it. It didn't pass the test, but it was vacant deliberately because the company knew it was bad news for the same sort of reasons we're seeing now with cannabis. But not since 1957 has a known genotoxin been marketed just for profit, and that's exactly what's going down here. And this is documented known genotox from the literature. In all six places, we have looked at birth defects, right? Hawaii, Colorado, Canada, USA, Australia, and Europe, the signals for the genotox, for the genetic, the chromosomal disorders are very strong. In fact, in the US, as I mentioned a moment ago, all the chromosomal disorders which are tracked with cannabis. In Europe, they have Klinefelters as well and Beta-Turner syndrome data, and all the chromosomal syndromes, genetic defects, tracked with cannabis in all six jurisdictions we've looked at. So there's really no question. This is a huge issue. And you're talking about direct chromosomal genotoxicity.
Well, one thing I think we need to take into consideration here in the U.S. too is you can go into your local, what do they call them, pot shop or whatever.
Collective.
Yeah. You can go into your local collective and the gentleman behind the counter, who is an expert in cannabis can prescribe you the variety that will help you with sleep, with, aches and pains. And, you know, they'll prescribe you the exact, blend. And I think they're called herbatologists or something crazy, but I mean, these are people that have no formal cannabis education other than what they learned, you know, when they applied for the job. And it's just crazy to me that people can retail a product like this with no.
It's called medicine. They have actual doctors that will give somebody a prescription.
A prescription for it. Yeah, it's crazy to me.
Yes, sir. That is crazy. The other thing that worries us very much here in Australia, looking on from the outside, is this business of it entering the food chain. There have been press reports in France and Germany that babies are being born without limbs. And there are no such press reports issuing from Switzerland, which is interesting because in Switzerland, you're not allowed to have cannabis in the food chain. But it appears from what we can see that it is entering the food chain in parts in France and Germany. And in parts of France, the parts near Switzerland, remember Switzerland has zero, they reckon the rate of babies born without arms has gone up 60 times. And if you look at the first report from Hawaii, the number of the relative rate there of arms in cannabis exposed, I think it was about 18 times normal, but the confidence interval went up to 64 times.
What does that mean? More likely to happen?
That means, of the people who smoked cannabis when they were pregnant, they had 18 times more birth defects with no arms and legs than those who didn't smoke. But the confidence interval, the uncertainty interval, if you like, ranged from about 4 to 64 times. And in Aisne, in the northeast of France, it was reported that it was 60 times higher, which is in that confidence interval. That's what I'm saying. It was described in a way. And so this stuff is in the food chain. Almost certainly in France and Germany, and I suspect in parts of the US. Like, we know that in Mississippi and Kentucky, the rate of atrial septal defect has taken off like a moonshot and is 20 or 30 times higher than the rest of the country. And I know that in the US Farm Act, there was a lot of, $1 million nearly, I think, went to support the US farms after the tobacco class settlement. And a lot of the crops were changed from tobacco to cannabis. So the question is, are the cows idiots? Because what happened in France, the cows were born without legs and the kids were born without limbs. Right. So it was obviously in the food chain, got to the kids, and they got no arms and legs. So the question is this happening in parts of the U.S.? Is that why Mississippi and Kentucky, their atrial septal defect, the holes in the heart, rates have gone up, taken off, like literally gone vertical like a moonshot in recent years? Is it contaminating the food chain? Because if it is, cancer is relatively rare. Birth defects are relatively rare. But you're trashing your genome, and that is known to cause aging across whole populations. And you mentioned carbofuran getting in the water table. Cannabinoids, some of them are water soluble enough to get into the food chain, into the water table as well, which gets them into the food chain.
That's what I wonder.
You're now aging whole populations. We've got quite a lot of evidence of that. So we're very concerned, particularly in the context of an exponential dose response. As countries and states move into a legalization paradigm, they're legalizing unlimited smoking, consumption of unlimited amounts. You're moving up into the highly genotoxic range, and you hit a speed bump, and it takes off vertically. And this is what's really worrying us. Remember that CDC and our public health authorities are not tracking cancer and birth defects really in real time. Okay, the birth defects are 4 or 5 years behind, or even more, I think, behind current, and cancer is 3 or 4 years behind current. So what we're seeing is recent historical data, but we know about the exponential dose response. It's well described. The exponential dose response is seen in dozens of lab studies, and we are seeing it over and over and over again in epidemiological analysis in clinical populations.
Oh my God. Okay. Well.
Well, 5 years ago,
we are obviously mental. So
yeah, you didn't have the massive grows that you have.
No.
Today, particularly in California. I mean, you had sporadic illegal grows here and there that were caught and chopped down, and of course a lot of them got to market. But today, the illegal grows are massive.
We're destroying our rural areas, which is where our food comes from.
Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me that it's ending up in the food chain. Aside from the fact that you can buy it as an edible now in all kinds of forms.
Let's hit that when we come back too. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with our guest, Dr. Stuart Reese. And you're listening to We the People. You can find more information at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Hey, thanks.
Crazy. They're not starting that again, are they?
Well, people say that I'm crazy. I'm a time bomb, that's a chicken. I even heard someone say they saw me acting like a chicken. I've been known to do impressions of a ducky or a cow. Well, I used to be crazy, but I'm a whole lot better now.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Reese, whose country is, how about ahead on usage? I mean, who's using all this? I mean, it feels like it's the United States, but that's just where we live. Is this just a worldwide phenomenon? Is anybody not into the marijuana thing?
Gosh, that's a good question. The question is, where would you get reliable data on that?
Oh, true.
I mean, I think probably cannabis use is rising around the world, but it's not rising uniformly. I would have to refer you to the World Drug Report from the UN Office of Drugs and Crime for data on that. You could get data on that. Some of the data from the third world, though, would not be reliable. I think the US is a particular focus, but the big concern is that wherever cannabis goes or it really takes off, civilization takes a nosedive. So parts of the North, India, Morocco, parts of Egypt, when cannabis really takes off, its intrinsic chemical properties are so severe that it will trash the region that it does. And it's been seen repeatedly wherever this stuff really takes off in a big way. So I don't think it's uniform worldwide. Certainly I agree that California is an epicenter and we know about the North. In fact, we recently, a year or two ago, we published, I think it was JAMA Surgery, and we said that the north of California is a particular focus of gastroschisis and autism, because north of California was a hot spot for autism and a hot spot for gastroschisis. Gastroschisis is one of those defects babies are born with where the guts are hanging out on the outside and they can twist, they can die, the liver can get involved. In 10% of cases, the babies die. But it struck us that both autism and gastroschisis had been known for the literature to be linked with cannabis. And it had been described that the north of California, these were hotspots, and we connected them together and said, oh my gosh, the California hotspot, it's showing up in this already.
So what about the places that are growing hemp? Because that's kind of a big, frankly, I think it's kind of like an excuse to grow pot. But okay, so let's just say they're really actually growing hemp. Does that have all these same properties, and is that contributing those things to the water table and the livestock and all the rest of it?
Yes, ma'am. That's what I said. This is a class effect across. This is not just about Delta 9 THC. Okay, it's not just about Delta 9, because that's what the hemp is about. Okay, it's low in Delta 9. But it's the other cannabinoids, the other chemicals, they all share that central cannabinoid nucleus. The olivetol nucleus. That is the genotoxic bit that was shown by Gabriel Nahas in 1999. And now, as I say, in lots of jurisdictions. And what Nahas observed in the lab in 1999, we have now confirmed epidemiologically in human populations.
Wow. How long have you been looking at this?
Well, I've been working pretty hard on it for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. We've written a 4,000-page book which looks at the space-time epidemiology and the causal, from a causal inference, not just associations but causality. That's advanced statistics, as you said earlier, and it's taken me a long time to learn it and then to get the data and to pull it together and to get it published. Most of what I'm talking about is published or will be soon published in the next few weeks and days. We've got a big paper coming out about the US whole profile of birth defects in one of the big American medical journals in the next few days that's going to be released. And, you know, when it comes available, I'll flick it to you. You can put it on your page if you like.
Yes, please.
So in some of these areas you mentioned, like India, Egypt, you know, some of these countries that have high use, what type of societal changes are we seeing in those areas?
Look, thank you for asking that question, Bill. Look, that leads me into something else. So I just address another thing, and I'll come to your question on the way back. We talked a moment ago about aging and how entering the food chain is going to trash the DNA. It's going to have a negative health effect on everybody exposed. And so I wanted to talk about some of the evidence for that. And probably the leading feature of that is the toxic profile of cannabis itself. Now, we can probably summarize cannabis toxicity in the following groups. There's the acute toxicity occurs in the brain, which is the sedation and the sleepiness and the nausea, vomiting, hallucination. there's the mental illnesses with the brain which occur after long-term exposure, which is most mental illnesses. There's impaired driving which occurs. It aborts the normal lifetime trajectory. People form long-term stable relationships. They get jobs, they get houses, they move on, they have a career. It's got a gateway effect to other addictions that's known in the scientific literature. It's not controversial, it's known, it's accepted, it's established. It affects the respiratory system, the aerodigestive tract, and the bladder and kidneys. That's just general cannabis toxicity. That's not genotoxicity. That's general toxicity. If we look at this group of problems, it affects the reproductive tract in the male and female. These are all age-defining illnesses, the reproductive toxicity in the male and female. It affects the liver and causes liver scarring and liver cirrhosis, age-defining illness. It affects numerous cancers, at least 10 in the literature, and 3 of them in children. It affects congenital anomalies, as we've said. It affects the arterial system, cardiovascular, aging, heart attack and strokes. They're age-defining illnesses. It affects the immune system in an age-defining way. It affects, it causes a hormonal endocrinopathy. It whacks your hormones out of whack in an age-defining way. And it's got genotoxic effects on the DNA breaks, telomere loss, on the epigenome, the control system for the genes, and it causes errors of mitosis and meiosis, so cell division. All of that group of stuff is age-defining conditions. So that in alone is strong evidence that cannabis exposure causes aging. Now, in the communities that you're talking about, like North India and Morocco and parts of Egypt and the rest, where cannabis really takes, and you can see it today in the cannabis slums of Colorado, and I'll bet there's places in the north of California which extremely degenerate. What you see is the list I just read out of control, right? So you see the homeless in the park. They're full of poly addiction, poly drug use, cannabis leaf drug. They're full of mental illness. They're full of short lifespans. They're full of cardiovascular problems, chest problems. The whole thing is on display in its unvarnished glory. It's what you see, and I've seen the slides of the drug slums in Colorado, and they look the same as our drug slums here. And wherever this stuff goes and really takes hold and takes over a community, the whole community is trashed. And what you see is the toxic effect of cannabis in its unvarnished glory, which you know, excuse the phrase, but it ain't pretty.
No. And what about the people that will tell you that it's not a gateway drug the people that are living on the street and that kind of thing? That's not marijuana. That's opioid addiction. That's alcohol. We have like 5 minutes till the top of the hour, but I would really like to know your thoughts on, because that's always the pushback. Well, alcohol's legal and that's ruined so many lives, blah, blah, blah. They're the same. They always link them as the same.
Well, there's two comebacks to that. The first one is that in many places, certainly in this country, about 98% of our opioid addicts, they started with cigarettes, alcohol, or cannabis. Cannabis is a gateway drug. If you go to the scientific literature, there is no question. This is not controversial. This is established. This is accepted. Cannabis is a gateway drug. And I was recently interviewed on radio. They asked a similar question. And I said, every opiate death in this country can be laid at the feet of cannabis, because that's where it started. And that's where people's opiate addiction started. I mean, there are exceptions, of course. There's medical addiction, which starts from doctors, but that's only about 1 or 2% in this country. I gather it's more in the US, but every opiate death actually is a cannabinoid death, in that sense. The other big thing is when you look at the genotoxicity of cannabis and alcohol, tobacco, and you compare them side by side, cannabis and the cannabinoids are much, much worse. Often in many analyses, they're worse than alcohol and tobacco combined. So that cannabis is not just another drug that's bad for you. It's not just another social drug like alcohol and tobacco. This is actually a major genotoxin. And our argument is that the cannabis and the cannabinoids, all of them need to be regulated like every other major genotoxin in the country. And if you're talking about aging your whole population because it's got unauthorized entry into the food chain, which is happening without people's knowledge and without their consent, then this just doesn't make sense. And it's, in the long term, it's unsustainable. And where our simple argument is, if this is genotoxic and it's a major genotoxin, worse than alcohol and tobacco combined in many analyses, then it needs to be treated appropriately like every other major genotoxin and restricted and controlled for the safety and the well-being, not just of public health, but of the next. You're talking about four or five generations. When you talk about epigenotoxicity, we know it goes at least three or four generations and maybe more. The studies haven't gone long enough. You're talking about the next 100 years we're trying to protect here.
Wow. Wow, I never thought of that. Yeah, it would be a generational thing at that point. Interesting.
It just continues on and on. I'm assuming that there is a connection with, but you said even with low to no THC, this still has the genotoxic effect. But what about the really, really high THC content that we see now that, say, wasn't there 50 years ago? Does that just pour gas on the fire, or is it all just part and parcel the same thing?
Yeah, well, that's just taking you up into the genotoxic range, fine, where all these things just go vertical. They take off like a rocket. And the high THC, yeah, you're right. See, think about this. I said right at the beginning that cannabinoid genotoxicity is not controversial. It's not controversial because the industry agree with it and they openly talk about it. I was debating on radio with one of their leading advocates recently, and he said publicly, I don't recommend it in pregnancy.
He said he doesn't recommend it what?
Was,
say that again?
He doesn't recommend cannabis in pregnancy.
Oh.
Right? Right? And, well, the obvious comeback was, well, why not?
Right.
Because they know it's genotoxic, right? Well, if it's genotoxic for the pregnant, does that mean it's good for everyone who's not pregnant? Because the answer is no, because it's genotoxic, right? But we looked at this in Europe. See, Europe is the same as America. They've got more people smoking cannabis. They've got more people.
Uh-oh. We're having a little sound. We're having a little sound crisis there. We missed that whole chunk. Gosh, you know what? This is great. We're coming up on the 1 hour break. What a perfect time! Because he's frozen on the screen, so we need to unfreeze. We need to unfreeze Dr. Reese. We need to release him from his little prison. He's trapped. We will be back with you, though. And the great part is we've got 5 minutes of news for you. I'm sure it's all happy news because, you know, that's all we ever have. And we will be back with you. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Change, change, change. Change, change.
To the second hour of We the People Radio. I have to tell you, if you missed the first hour, you better go back to the archive and listen. Robert will have it all cut up. It'll be uninterrupted. It's free to listen to. It's an MP3 file. You can download it, share it. I don't care what you do with it, but please get this program out to people because this information is just not really being made public.
No.
We have some really good scientists working on the effects of cannabis, and the industry is busy telling us that it's great and natural and blah blah blah. So if you actually still believe those things, I think you should listen to the show at least two times. I will replace your medical marijuana prescription with listening to this show two times. Okay, I can't really do that, but I'm just going to pretend.
Yeah.
So now that I roped our sponsor in, you want to tell people who they are?
Yeah, our sponsor is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Pape Machinery is probably the largest John Deere dealer now in Northern California. In fact, I think they might be the only one in Northern California now. But go by and see them if you're looking for service parts, need a new tractor, implements. They got it all going on up there. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. and they do everything John Deere, steel, Honda. They've got it all. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
There you go.
Snazzy. Well, our guest today is Dr. Stuart Reese, and he is a researcher. He not only works with patients, but he is a researcher. He's a professor of medicine at the University of Western Australia and the Edith Cowan University, which are both near Perth in Western Australia. So we are we're way out on a limb today. We're using Zoom, and I don't know. Technology has not been kind to us over the years.
No, no.
But today and today only.
Today it's going to work flawlessly.
Today it's worked out really, really well. And I'm really glad it has, because this is a message that really needs to get out there as people are being lured more and more and more into that cannabis wasteland where it's good for everything. You know, you should give it to your dog. And just in case you thought CBD was great. And
yeah,
you
see,
thought,
that's the one that kind of surprised me, because
you thought hemp was great. Yeah. And it's just the THC. It's just the THC that's bad. Dr. Reese, since we're not scientists, what'd you call it? You called it cannabidiol 9 or somebody's 9. That's the THC that makes people high. But the rest of it still has all the bad stuff.
Yes, ma'am. That's correct. You got that.
That's the obviously the the English major's version is it still has all the bad stuff.
Yeah, and yet they retail it at your major retailers. Over the counter.
Yeah. So if people are using this as a cream, maybe they're not smoking it or eating it. Maybe it's a cream of some sort or something like that. This is all, I mean, obviously your largest organ is the skin. I did pass that part of science. I do know that. But this is all being absorbed into the skin and basically going to have the same effect on the genome as all the things that you've described. Is that true?
Yes, ma'am. That's right. That's right. Remember, it's a dose-related effect, and the cannabinoids are fat-soluble, so they build up in the fat, and it exponentiates at high dose. So for a regular smoker, they say that for a regular smoker who's smoking a lot, he needs to be off the cannabis. He needs to have a six-month break from it before you can no longer detect it in his urine, because it's soaked into his fat stores so deeply. And, of course, the brain's largely made of fat, all the insulation layers of fat, so it soaks into the brain as well. So it's the people who use it, just say you use it every day on your skin, you think about the cumulative dose of that and the build-up plus this exponential dose response effect at the high end of the dosing range, which obviously we're getting into in these legal paradigms, right? You've got what we talked about before. You've got a higher prevalence of use, more people using, a higher intensity of use, more people using daily, and higher THC and CBD concentrations. So you're leapfrogging right into the exponential genotox dose response range, which is where the wheels really fall off.
And, I think the term that you, I don't know if you coined it, but as far as we're concerned, you coined it. This is like a lawnmower for your chromosomes.
Yeah, you could call it a lawnmower for chromosomes. Do you guys have whippersnippers in the U.S.? But I don't know what you call them. You call them whippersnippers?
No.
Like a weed whacker, like the thing that has like the little thing that spins around and.
Yeah, is that what you call it, a weed whacker?
Yeah.
Well, I really think it's like a weed whacker for chromosomes, right? But I didn't know what the American term is. In Australia, we'd call it a whippersnipper, but maybe it's like
that better.
Weed whacker or a lawnmower for chromosomes. You think about it, 70 chromosomal arms amputated 6.5 times faster than controls, all in just 13 years. I mean, this is chromosomal magic for making chromosomes virtually disappear. I mean, it's amazing.
Wow.
I was thinking about it during the break. What would this be like? I mean, can you compare this to anything else?
Yeah, I can. It's very like the known genotoxins, right? I mean, you go back to 1999, Gabriel Nahas in his studies, the positive control was mitomycin C, which is the known genotoxin. It's a cancer drug. It's so dangerous it's hardly used anymore, except for the worst cancers. And the cannabinoids were testing positive right up there with them. In terms of birth defects, cannabis actually has of the 31 birth defects that were described with thalidomide, cannabis causes 21, which is about 67%.
Wow.
Of Wait, do that again. Thalidomide caused
31 birth defects.
And cannabis causes 21 of those 31. Right? So 67%, you can compare it to thalidomide, right? Of the 13 mechanisms of action in the cells that thalidomide has, cannabis does 12. So you can compare it to thalidomide, you can compare it to any known major genotoxin. This is major genotoxin. So this is a very big effect. We talked a minute ago about testicular cancer, but we published a couple of years ago looking at females because it's not good for females either, and females have menopause. Now, females have a hormonal cycle. They have a monthly cycle. The ovaries produce estrogen and progesterone. This is controlled from the brain. The two reproductive hormones coming out of the brain is FSH and LH, luteinizing hormone, follicle-stimulating hormone. In young women, the LH is higher than the FSH. Around the time of the menopause, the ratio inverts, and the FSH becomes higher than the LH, so that the FSH-LH ratio inversion is a metric of the perimenopause. And we studied this in a couple of hundred opiate and cannabinoid addicts a couple of years ago and published, and we found a 60% reduction in that metric of reproductive lifespan in females, right? So instead of going through the inversion point, the hormonal inversion point at 46 years, they went through it at 28 years, right, which is sick as a 60% reduction in the reproductive fertility period in females. So in other words, it's bad for the males, as we said before, and it's a disaster for females because, of course, when they lose their hormones and they get into a pseudo-perimenopausal state, the wheels fall off their health in a huge way. That's one of the reasons why you see it clinically really dramatically in these people. And in their 30s and 40s, the female patients who work with cannabis, they look really shocking. And now we've put our finger on some biological metrics. We can actually measure that and quantify. We found a 60% reduction in that fertile period by that metric. It was published a couple of years ago.
So basically that's a 60% reduction in their ability to get pregnant.
Yeah, and it's a collapse. It represents a collapse of the normal premenopausal hormone milieu. Cannabis is associated with reduced fertility in males and females, and obviously that is a key reproductive metric, and that collapses. You think about it, comes down from 46 to 28, right? And if you say that it really gets going about the age of 15, then you can calculate the difference at 13 years versus 31 years. And so you get this massive 60% drop. So it's a train wreck for males. It's a train wreck for females. And you're talking about putting this stuff in the food chain, which is what's obviously going on de facto through the water table, and through the livestock, and without telling people and without their consent, and you're trashing the biological crown jewels, the DNA, the information at the heart of every cell. As I said to you, not since 1957 has the known genotoxin been marketed just for cash, which is what's going down now.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's...
And the money is mind-blowing. So anybody who thinks... anybody who still thinks this, it never listens to our show. So I hope that you will tune in more often and or go to the pot tab on the top of our webpage, where you can catch up on all of this great stuff. But you can't make that kind of money legally growing marijuana. Too many restrictions and all that. I mean, they thought that they would have all these people taking out business licenses and growing it legally, and it would get well. Yeah, I don't know if they really thought it was going to happen, but that's what they said.
Well, they thought there was going to be a big tax influx.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're going to make a bunch of money, and it's going to funnel toward law enforcement and our towns.
And none of that happened.
Get
none
rid of
it.
All the black market. And all it really did was explode the black market, and people are making billions.
And legalize it recreationally to make the demand even higher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They had a bust here a few weeks ago, Dr. Reese. It was like the final product, 250 tons of product with an estimated value of like $500 million, all illegal. So Anybody who thinks we just legalize it and that solves the problem.
Yeah, it was destined for, I think, the East Coast or someplace.
Actually,
back
in
there.
Effect, California has sort of legalized it. I mean, you look at if, when you watch Cartelville, the one sheriff explains it, and he says, "Why would you grow illegal marijuana anywhere but California? It's a misdemeanor with a $500 fine. So you could make millions of dollars, and if you get caught, you have a misdemeanor and a $500 fine."
Or
you could grow it legally. It'll cost you a fortune and you'd never get the misdemeanor and the $500 fine. I mean, just the incentive isn't there.
Right.
We've incentivized, the illegal. Okay. So tell me this, what about all this, food that has, you know, hemp seeds and all that stuff in it? That's all big now. Hemp bread. I see it everywhere.
Oh, it's in shampoo. It's in everything.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Shampoo and all that stuff. Is that all still the same stuff?
Yes, ma'am. That is the same stuff.
Oh, my God.
Think about this. I said at the beginning, cannabinoid genotoxicity is not controversial. It's not controversial. It's known. It's accepted by the industry, right? And let me say this. It seems to me that's why we have to have a legal cannabis process, because it has to get around the FDA regs, which protect the community, because they know it would fail those tests, the genotoxic tests that protect the community. In other words, this has all been done deliberately to bypass the genotoxic safeguard. And now what our studies are showing is that the genotoxic outcomes and the downstream things of genotoxic cancer, aging, and birth defects are far worse than anyone's ever imagined. The cannabis genotoxicity is the reason we have to have, you know, the corruption of the ballot process with the propaganda campaign. That is the reason we have this whole, you know, thing sweeping the country, the U.S., from west coast to east, because they know the genotoxicity is true, and the community, no one in the community understands what genotoxicity is about, understands what we actually mean when we say this trashes the genome, because when you start to unpack that concept, the only reaction you can have is, oh, my goodness, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we kind of read the bit that you had sent us, and we thought, okay, we have no idea what he's talking about. But when you start talking about thalidomide and the tight profile to thalidomide and the same outcome and all that, okay, yes. you might be in your 20s and not know that, but that information is available. I mean, go look that up. That's
well, if you think about it, if you as a drug manufacturer introduced a drug that had had to pass the FDA, say, and it had these types,
never happened.
It would never get passed. It would never make it to market. But yet, we allow this to enter our society because of the money.
As a safe, natural alternative, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Well, our whole thing, because we've spoken with Heidi Swan, who I think is how we got connected with you, and, you know, they talk about the psychosis and all those kinds of things, the mental health implications of the use of this whole thing. But I'm sorry, taking a, what did you call it, a whirly trimmer? No, what's your weed whacker called? A whippersnipper. It's a whippersnipper. You're going to take a whippersnipper to your chromosomes.
Yeah.
Might want to think that through. I mean, most people would not want to sign on to that. We have to take a really quick break here. We will be, easy for me to say, we will be right back with our guest, Dr. Stuart Reese. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Say whippersnipper.
Hold on, I
got to
push
fast.
The button. Yeah, stall for time.
Ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got minds to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Well, you know, we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Until we close our eyes for good. Say the truth will set you free. Hello, hello, let me tell you what it's like to be a zero, zero. Let me show you what it's like to always feel, feel. Like I'm empty and there's nothing really real, real. I'm looking for the way out. Hello, hello, let me tell you what it's like to be a zero.
That's what you have to look forward to in long-term cannabis use. I found that little gem last night. You can grow up and be a zero.
Yeah.
It's probably all the chromosomes you'll have left.
Yeah.
If you get the whippersnipper on them.
And you'll be okay with it.
Yeah, and you'll never know. You'll never know it happened. Because yeah. You stored it all in the fat cells in your brain, you dummy. Okay, so we're curious about the – sitting here talking during the break. We're curious about the length of use. So if somebody smokes pot, obviously once, that's tremendously different than if they use it every day for 10 years. But what did you find? Like, what was the correlation on the term, you know, the length of use? Anything?
Yes, ma'am. It gets back to the cumulative dose business we talked about and the way cannabis builds up in the body. Certainly with testicular cancer, there's been a dose response link reported in the literature with the amount of time smoked, with the numbers smoked, with the intensity of smoke, and with the number of years smoked. And it's all about the cumulative dose and getting up into that exponential dose range at the higher levels, which obviously under a legal paradigm, you're going to do more and more through increased duration of smoke, increased intensity of smoke, daily use, and increased concentration of THC, increased concentration of many of the cannabinoids. So, anything that increases your cumulative cannabinoid. One very bright light in all of the story though recently, and that was came out from the Duke University group, who showed that when you stop cannabis smoking, I think it was about 17 weeks later, a lot of the epigenetic, a lot of the gene regulatory damage reverses back towards normal. So it's not a one-way street. You know, it's always about the cumulative dose exposure. So anything that increases your cumulative dose exposure, whether through increased length of years of smoking or secondhand smoke or whatever it is, it's always cumulative dose exposure. It's the total cannabinoid exposure, which is genotoxin, the things that get you up in that high dose exponential area. That's where the really serious damage is going to be seen commonly.
I'll just speak about that for a minute.
I mean, obviously, I'm a doctor and an academic, so I have to be careful what I say. And I was talking to one of my patients recently about this, one of my patients who comes from a high drug-using area. And I said, we're worried that maybe 10% of the babies would have their brain function altered in some way. And he said, doctor, no, you're wrong. It's not 10%, maybe 70, maybe 80% of those who smoke cannabis seriously. You know, and I mean, the recent National Survey of Drug Use and Health from SAMHSA, I think showed hundreds of thousands of women in the US smoking cannabis when they're pregnant, their first trimester, right? And you're talking about my patients who come from those areas telling me, doc, it's 70 or 80% of those kids. In fact, like in Australia, there's a whole school in Adelaide, which is in South Australia, devoted just to autistic kids. A whole school just for autistic.
Wow.
Now, we didn't have that 20 years ago, right? And see, when I was on the radio debating with this cannabis advocate recently, he said, goodness me, Dr. Rich, you think the wheels are falling off the culture? Well, I sort of said, well, thank you for asking, because when you start to measure it, maybe they are. You know, you look at all these birth defects rising. Look at, you know, did you know the rate of testicle cancer in the U.S. doubled from 1975 to now? The rate of pediatric cancer went up 50%, right? Cannabis has been linked with the commonest cancer in adults, which is breast cancer, the commonest cancer in kids, which is acute lymphoid leukemia. It's been shown to drive pediatric the rise in 62 defects that is tracked in the US. This is big news, and no one's looking, no one's measuring. It's all based on the don't ask, don't tell policy. But when you actually look at the stuff, when we actually went looking in the epidemiology, in the population health patterns for the genotoxin described by Nahas and others right back from 1969, it's the signal is there loud in the places that I mentioned earlier, the same issue. This is a big loud signal for anyone who wants to take a look. And it's positive. Personally, I think it's scary. These guys are putting the stuff in the food chain and you're talking about, you know, length of exposure, out there consent, and we know it's an angiotoxin. This is serious, serious business.
Yeah, we already know that adding hormones to chickens and beef and that sort of thing is and cow's milk is having an effect on our kids.
Well, people are worried about GMOs.
Yeah, yeah, and then we have this. Let me ask you this. So you're a regular user, and you smoke enough to where it is actually damaging your chromosome. That cannot be reversed. Is that correct?
Once the whippersnipper takes over, is that the end of the show?
Now, once the chromosomes are gone, the chromosomes are gone. I mean, the cells replicate. The business of cutting chromosomes is controlled by the epigenome. Okay, everyone knows what DNA looks like. It looks like a spiral helix. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. But it's got little markers on it that turn genes on and off. And the markers are called the epigenome, the DNA methylation or the epigenome. And some of that is reversible. Now, those epigenome, those gene controllers control where the chromosomes are cut. So improving the epigenetic damage is going to improve some of this cutting. See, you have to understand that, that a lot of memory, a lot of historical data is held in the epigenome on the stem cells. Right? So you think about this, like we've all had COVID vaccines, so many people have had COVID vaccines now, right? But immune cells, a lot of them only live for 3 days. So how does your immune system actually remember anything if all the cells are dead in 3 days? And the answer is the information is stored on the epigenome, on the gene regulatory system on the immune stem cells. And the same in the neurons in the brain, right? They're long-living cells, they don't divide. So epigenetic memories are held fundamentally epigenetically and in the epitranscriptome, which is also in the neurites and stuff like that. But so the point is that some of that damage is potentially reversible. And if you get cells which have got busted chromosomes, they're usually progeny cells. And if the stem cells are preserved, then you could have a better outcome from the stem cells. So some of it's reversible. But as you rightly say, amputating chromosomes from any cell is a serious business. And all this stuff, you know, like your question now, is it repairable if you come good? Is it really in your stem cells or not? The science really isn't there as yet. But it's a very serious question. And obviously we shouldn't be flooding our countries with this stuff if this stuff even might be occurring.
Yeah, if we don't know, why are we messing with it? Exactly.
Well, I think that's an interesting point, though, because you look at vaccines. Okay, we won't get into the one that's out there currently, which, yeah, has all sorts of issues that we could get into, but won't, because we don't want you to wind up in a gulag somewhere in Australia. That would be bad. I'm sure we would wind up in the gulag in Australia, we're sorry, but we'll never come and visit.
Broadcasting from the gulag.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. They would have us in a heartbeat. But the thing that, what about all polio and all these things that little kids get? I mean, diseases they do not get anymore because they're vaccinated for that, for legitimate things. So, if they are exposed to, I mean, little kids are probably not, you know, eating or smoking actual marijuana, but if they're exposed to that in utero, they've got all the chromosomal damage that'll make it not be able to remember that they got these vaccines too. Is that correct?
Sort of. It's part of the group. Yeah.
I didn't really think I was going to get an A for that, but it's like, am I on the trail?
Yes, you're hot on the trail. Let me put it that way. Kids exposed in utero are going to have their brain function affected, and they're going to have their immune function affected, and they're going to have chromosomes affected, they're going to have their genome affected, they're going to have their epigenome affected, and they're going to have their metabolism affected. Because the epigenome is run by the metabolism. Everything in the cell needs energy. Everything in the cell needs bits and pieces, right? The epigenome is run by methyl groups, one carbon groups, by acetyl groups, which is two carbon groups, by phosphate groups, by sulfate groups, by lots of over 100 groups, all of which come from the metabolism. The metabolism of the cell supplies the energy, and it supplies the small molecule modifiers, the co-reactants and the epigenetic reactions. So that changing your metabolism, we know that cannabis changes your metabolism. Changing your metabolism changes your genome, changes your epigenome, changes your brain, and all of this is followed through. That's why we've written a book about cannabis-induced neurotoxicity and genotoxicity, and you're right, it's the kids are exposed in utero, and it comes out in the long term. And to me, this is so unfair. Right? It's so unfair.
Yeah, they had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in Australia, I don't know what the sentence for murder is in America, but in Australia, you get 15 years. But a mother who has a baby who's affected, is severely autistic or has one of these severe congenital anomalies, will be chained to that child for the term of her natural life. And she maybe wasn't even told. Maybe she didn't even smoke cannabis. Maybe it was just in the food or the milk in the refrigerator. And she wasn't even knowingly exposed. This is so unfair. And I mean, in Australia, I mean, like I said, the stuff's starting to come here. It's the kids' gummy bears. It's right beside the vitamins, 2 foot off the ground in the supermarket, completely unregulated beside the brightly coloured gummy bears with the genotox warning on the label where the kids are going to grab it, 2 feet off the floor with the genotox warning on the side. If people knew what genotox actually meant, it would be a different world.
Yeah, I can only imagine. Is anybody writing a book? Is anybody taking your data and turning it into a book for regular people who are not Geno speakers?
Well, at this point,
Geno dummies for dummies or something.
Now, the point we're at right now, I mentioned we've got a large book which considers this epidemiology in detail. It's almost 4,000 pages long. We're presently negotiating with publishers. We've published about 10 papers in this area, which are pretty hard-hitting. There are another 10 papers before the journals, which are all going to come out, which, you know, document everything I'm talking about. So we're just at that point. And you're dead right. You know, we need a popular version that people understand. We need to, if I can accomplish one thing, which is help people understand what genotoxicity actually means. To us, it's very paradoxical. The U.S. was stars, right? The U.S. was stars in 1957 when thalidomide broke, okay? There was a Dr. Kelsey, I think her name was, at the FDA, who busted distillers and said, there is no genotox thing in your file. We're going to close you down. We're not going to allow you in the U.S. So the U.S. Avoided the thalidomide bullet, and President Kennedy awarded Dr. Kelsey the highest civilian medal of honor for that in 1957. And see, in Europe, where this sort of information is available, people are very freaked out because much of Europe was exposed to thalidomide.
Right. And
so they know about genotox there, right? The US never had that nightmare experience. So now the country has been swamped with this, you know, green darkness, if I can call it that, because they don't have that knowledge in their cultural history.
Wow. It occurs to me we probably need, you know, genotoxicity for potheads should be probably the name of the
book.
Well,
it kind of explains.
We need somebody to put this in a.
Yeah.
But it does explain a lot of different things that are going on that people will pass that off as a lot of different causes. And they'll look at everything but this if history is a teacher.
When you speak to somebody who smokes a lot of pot, I mean, you get that kind of dopey kind of mentality, and they can't remember anything, and they're, you know.
But there are a lot of people who use it. They claim that it's good for cancer and all that, and we've had Dr. Philip Drum on here a bunch of times talking about how this is not a substitute for – this is not a natural substitute for anything. And if it carries this kind of a price tag, you'd be lucky if all you have is a psychotic break
right
at this point.
Well, 10, 15 years down the road, what are we going to be looking at then?
Yeah, well, you see, there was a study published in 2018 in Substance Use and Misuse that looked at the death rate amongst cannabis users. It's 30% over 30 years. That's a pretty hard endpoint. And if you think about it, if you've got severe mental illness and all this other stuff going on, but it's part of the aging syndrome, a high death rate is obviously an age-defining illness, then this when you put it all together, when you connect these dots, you say, oh, my gosh, why didn't we see? And that's why we're doing our work, to help people connect these dots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no kidding. And we're just being completely stupid. I mean, we're knee-deep in the crime side of it. But the toll, not just – I mean, besides the fact you have to live around these places and – oh, they had, you know, a little tiny town that's near one of these gigantic, you know, thousands and 5,000 greenhouses. And they've got fentanyl. A little kid, a 5-year-old, was exposed to that on a playground.
Yeah, where'd that come from?
Who is fentanyl on a playground?
Well, we recently...
Unless you're right next to a giant, you know, drug cartel.
Yeah, we recently had a couple of murders on the side of the road near
a little grow area
in our town. So, I mean, it's not a good deal.
But this is people who will not be able to be productive, not be able to care for themselves. What about all the... When you talk about the aging, does that also get in... Ah, shoot, we have to take another break again, darn it. Okay, after the break, I want to know... How you think this profiles, or maybe you already know how this profiles with dementia, Alzheimer's, that kind of thing. Are we looking at earlier onset for all that? Because I'm guessing I might get a gold star on that one. I'm bucking for the gold star. That's really what I'm after after here. We will be right back. Our guest is Dr. Stuart Rees. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
A man walks down the street, he says, why am I short of attention? Got a short little span of attention, and all my nights are so long. Where's my wife and family? What if I die here? Who'll be my role model now that my role model is gone, gone? He ducked back down the alley with some roly-poly little bat-faced girl. All along, along, there were incidents and accidents. There were hints and allegations. If you'd be my bodyguard, I can be your long lost pal.
All the gold in California is in a bank in the middle of Beverly Hills. It's somebody else's name. So if you're dreaming about California, it don't matter at all where you played before. California's a brand new game.
Yep.
Yeah.
All the gold is in California.
Yep.
Yep. Only it's green.
And you know, if we were halfway smart and we made illegal cannabis cultivation a crime, we would probably see a lot of these people go away, but we seem to not make those kinds of decisions. So, just in case everybody's okay with the crime, you're okay with the crime and you're okay with the get rich quick, because we have a lot of people in regular industry selling soil and components for greenhouses and all that.
A lot of businesses are cashing in on it.
It's the second gold rush, really. And that, I think, fuels it.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So what about that was a good question.
What about the Alzheimer's and the dementia and all that? Are we speeding that up too, since they're aging themselves?
Yes, ma'am. I'm just looking at a study here in Well Psychiatry, just published a couple of weeks ago. The rate of dementia goes up fourfold.
Terrific!
Long-term cannabis use, but it's also associated with other things like other drug use and psychosis. And social isolation, all of which obviously march along with cannabis. So you can see that all these, you know, together go up. And there's another one, because you've probably heard a lot about CBD and neuroprotection, and they say it's good for neuroprotection. There's another one here published in Molecular Neurobiology just last year, this time last year. And it says that, yes, in the test tube, this stuff protects neurons, except when you give it to patients, they'll get poisoned. So there seems to be a hitch there, and I think of a lot of the issues. It's an area where there's ongoing damage, but at this, I mean, it's obvious if you look at, I mean, I've got lots of mental health patients. I work in an inner city area in Brisbane, so I've got lots of chronic mental health. Some of those started with cannabis, and I've got lots of psychosis in my drug addicted population. I've got a large addiction clinic who take care of about 600 drug addicts, and psychosis in those is very common and major. Bipolar, it's all very common. And as I said before, a lot of them currently smoke cannabis or began their addiction career with cannabis. So, you know, their brains are obviously, you know, not a long-term scenario. So the answer is really obvious when you look at these clinical populations, but it's also in the published literature as well, and it's a very clear answer.
Mm. Wow.
Do you know, have you seen any research on the treatment of PTSD with marijuana?
I've seen papers. It's not an area where I've done a literature review, so I can't speak authoritatively on that subject, I'm afraid.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, because we've heard from other people that you know, with the psychotic element of it and the psychotic break that, that can be caused, especially with the really high THC content, that's just not a, that's not something you want to experiment with.
Right.
Oh, yeah, well, I'd agree with that in general terms. Sure. Yeah.
Okay. And so how do we get out of this? I mean, do we really have to get our lawmakers to understand that this needs to actually be studied? It needs to get out of the feel good element with, you know, it's good for cancer, and all this different stuff. I guess we have to get past that somehow and get into some real science.
Well, I completely agree, Aaron. I think doing what you're doing now is absolutely central. People need to understand. I mean, the industry understands it's genotoxic. That's why we need to have legal cannabis, because they know they never get past the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
But people need to understand what we're talking about, understand the dementia, understand, you know, you're talking about, I mean, autism in the US is growing exponentially. We've published a couple of papers on that, and we've done a space-time analysis on that, which is currently with the journal, and it's associated over space-time and fulfills all the causal criteria. You're talking about an exponential epidemic, and we know the cause, and we're doing nothing. You know, this doesn't make sense. I mean, you're talking about women who might be wanting to start a family, and all they did was went to the refrigerator and had a glass of milk. That's all they did wrong, and they didn't know it had cannabis in the food chain. And so they had an autistic baby, which they didn't need to have. Like Melbourne in Australia, I don't know if you know this, but one of the biggest towns in Australia is called Melbourne. It's in the south in Victoria. It's the top of the pops for no arms and no legs globally, because no arms and no legs is part of this.
Really?
Right? And if you look at no arms and no legs, the leading center in the world for that is called the International Clearinghouse for Birth Defects Surveillance Research from Rome. And they did a whole review of the world history of no arms and no legs. And then they did another one of no, you know, the top part of your arm and the second part of your arm. And then just a hand where your hand is joined at the shoulder. The first two parts of the arm aren't there. That's called flipper in Latin. It's flipper limb or focamelia is Latin for flipper limb, right? Amelia is no arm, no leg. Focamelia. So two papers. Melbourne was top of the pops on that, right?
Now is Melbourne a high use, is it legal in Australia?
Well, no, well, it was thought not to be. But the thing is, there's a lot of migrant populations in Australia. So the point is they didn't have the high Amelia Focamelia rates in their countries of origin. But when they got to Melbourne, they did. Right? So there's a control right there. And Melbourne is surrounded with a lot of cannabis farms. Right? So our question, and I know, there are people who've been in Melbourne who are born without any arms or any legs, completely amillic, right? But he's got five kids and they're all fine. So it's not a genetic defect in the patients. It must be something environment Melbourne, and cannabis is linked like in three or four places in the world with no arms and no legs, right? So it must be something in environment, and it'll be very interesting because there's one of the things that, when babies are formed inside their mothers, there's a thing called morphogen gradients, right? There's these gradients of these chemicals which control, right, like front to back in the spinal cord. Let's talk about spinal cord for a moment. Which cell goes where? And there's a gradient comes from the skin at the back. There's a gradient comes near the aorta at the front. And between these two conflicting gradients, it specifies which cells go which. They have these gradients in three dimensions, you know, top to bottom, left to right, and front to back. And the gradients get messed up. So the same when the arm is forming inside the mother, about 22, 23 days of gestation, there's a little group of cells which release a morphogen called sonic hedgehog, and it controls limb development. And if you block sonic hedgehog, which cannabis does, if you block sonic hedgehog on day 22, 23, when the limb's about to, you get no limb. And then if the cannabis block goes away, you can get a hand, but no arm or limb. So it's easy to see why we've got no arm, why amelia and focamelia are happening, because if there's a cannabinoid insult, and if it's in the food
turning
chain,
it on and off as it goes.
Yeah. If you're mucking up these gradients which specify and control cell development. These gradients are well established in biology. And we know that cannabis messes with the seven main morphogen gradients, which go to form babies. And you wonder why there are thousands and thousands. In Europe, we looked at 90 birth defects, 90 and different metrics of cannabis. We were able to link with 89 of those 90 defects, right? So, but all of a sudden, you know, there's dozens of ways that cannabis will interfere with birth development. And this stuff is just, the society's treating it, as you said a moment ago, like ka-ching, ka-ching. It's just cash. This is crazy from a biological and medical point of view, which is why we have the legal cannabis system to bypass all of that. And you've basically got fraud conducted by the industry at the ballot box, and that's how we've gotten it. So the answer is to your questionnaire, is to do what you said. Educate people so they understand what we're talking about. Get the word out. Get it out in popular form. There was a book, there's been a couple of great books written about this in the last 40, 50 years. There's one called Pot Safari that you've probably heard of, right? But, you know, there's the genotox that was predicted in 1969 through 1999. We're now seeing in patterns of population health in multiple jurisdictions. That's the message we want to transmit. This is real. This is in your face. We've got it with the evidence we've got now. As the data becomes more current, because it's well behind, because it takes 8 years for the autism to be diagnosed, right? So of course the data is way behind where we're at currently, but with the data we've got now, overwhelmingly what we've predicted from the lab, this is a consistent pattern of evidence from the molecules, from the cells to the DNA. Cannabis mucks up the glue when the chromosomes are on the mitotic spindle at metaphase, when they separate out at anaphase. The glue that holds them there is mucked up by cannabis. So the chromosomes come unstuck. They get separated in a micronucleus. They get shattered. That becomes genetic junk that either kills the cell or causes birth defects or cancer or brain retardation. We know that. Cannabis has been known to be positive in a micronucleus assay, which is what I just said. The chromosome slips off the spindle because the glue literally came unstuck. Cannabis literally unstucks this from the kinetochore, which holds it on there. So this whole ka-ching, ka-ching thing, it's for the fairies, really.
Okay, so let's go a scenario. You're a high school age, we'll go with girls, high school age girl, who starts smoking pot. She's like 17, smokes pot till she gets out of college, maybe like 22, 23. Is that about right? Yeah. Yeah. 22, 23. Then decides to have kids. What are the odds that she becomes one of your statistics? Ballpark. I know scientists don't like ballparks.
Well, it depends what you mean. You're talking about autism. You're talking about birth defects. Are you talking about transgenerational transmission of cancer, right? And the question, which you didn't quite give me enough information, is what's the intensive use? Is this a cases once a month thing, or is this a daily thing? Because if it's daily, then she is one or perhaps multiple negative outcomes, right? These kids don't just get one birth defect. They get a whole bunch of them and cancer. Remember, cancer is heritable, right? Acute lymphoid leukemia is, most parents want to give their kids life. These parents are giving their kids cancer, right? You're not just talking about birth defects. You're talking about malignant teratogenesis, malignant mutagenesis intergenerationally. For at least three or four generations, that's what the science says.
And the kids, right? And so, the kids so, actually so get the cancer.
ALL is, it's a cancer of kids, right? And AML is strongly linked with cancer in several.
What is it? Always towards the top of the hour.
You're going to get the whippersnapper or the weedy girder, whatever you call that thing, on the chromosomes in the little boy. So you're actually giving your kids not just the gift of life, but the gift of cancer, as well as, you know, 30 or 40 birth defects.
Right.
And if that girl is smoking daily, she is going to be guaranteed. She's in the exponential zone, and she is going to become a social welfare burden for probably long term and her kids.
Yeah. And if she marries somebody who's also been, has the child's father is also a cannabis user, I would imagine the odds are just straight up.
Yeah. I mean, there's such a cover up going on, right? I mean, in Northern Rivers in New South Wales, that's where they grow the wheat in this country. There was a photo of, on the front page of the newspaper. They gave the mother's name, the father's name, and the baby's name. And mum sitting there, straight as a die, she looks like a real straight. She says, I don't know. I didn't take any of my pregnancy. And the father's there looking for all the world like a pothead. And he's got something around his neck, which looks to me like a satchel of weed. And mum's saying, I didn't know anything wrong in pregnancy. And it was cannabis. The world literature is screaming cannabis. In fact, in Canada, after multivariate adjustment, the rate of cannabis use was 3 times higher for gastroschisis, and at univariate adjustment for bivariate association, it was 9 times higher. So dad's sitting there with weed around his neck. Mum's saying, I didn't know anything wrong in pregnancy. All the girlfriends are saying, you're a bad mum because you had this. And the baby's got his guts hanging out, right?
Wow.
And everyone's saying, I didn't do nothing wrong. And then what's worse is the health department goes, this is what happened in Sydney, News and Wales, and did dodgy stats to cover it all up and mucked up the statistical analysis completely as a giant cover-up. And yet the world literature screams that we know that cannabis is linked with it. But it's insane, and it's very unfair on the mothers.
Yeah. Yeah, very unfair, and on the kids and everybody else. So anybody who's putting this all forward as a no big problem, you know, all these pot shops everywhere basically telegraphing to children that this is just a product. You go buy it at the store. Dr. Reese, we have hit the wall here. We're out of time, but we would love to have you back on. We'd love to make people aware of your research, and we thank you for getting up at the crack of dawn for us and joining us on Zoom. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Reese.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
It's been a pleasure being on your show. Thank you.
Thank you.
We really learned a lot. You're listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Hey, that was my part.